Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's John Boquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Thanks for tuning in to our award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, we're going to open catching up with the Connecticut River Conservancy to call on all of our listeners who care about the state and region's environmental quality. We want you to participate in their 23rd Source to Sea cleanup. This annual event has grown into one of the largest river cleanups in the country, and the Conservancy needs as many as 3,000 volunteers this year across the four states it serves to continue the tradition of getting dirty for cleaner rivers. It's happening on Friday and Saturday, September 27th and 28th, and we'll tell you all about it. Then we're going to talk about a first-of-its-kind service in Connecticut tied to non-emergency medical transportation. We're going to learn how New Horizons up in the Hartford area is opting to transport their Medicaid residents to doctor's appointments and other activities rather than relying on transportation companies to provide the service through its recently launched and expanded Sunshine Wheels program. And we're going to find out why the initiative has caught the eye and received support through the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving. And hey, if you can use a little help managing your money, we're going to tell you how to tap into all the free online Chelsea University financial literacy and community education programs created by Chelsea Groton Bank to empower individuals, families, and businesses to take control of their finances. Virtually all of them are online and free, so stay tuned to learn about that. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Boquette, right after this reminder. Speaking of financial planning, if you're seeking information on how to plan for future long-term care costs, you're going to want to attend one of the public forums coming up. They're called The Missing Link in Retirement Planning, Why and When to Consider Long-Term Care Insurance. These forums are going to be held at 6 p.m. on October 1st in Hamden at the Keefe Community Center and on October 9th at the Norwalk Public Library. These free two-hour sessions are open to the general public, and no insurance sales are going to be taking place at these forums. By attending one of these events, you're going to gain a better understanding of long-term care factors in retirement planning and what you need to know before buying long-term care insurance. To register for the program, just visit ctpartnership.org and click on the public forum link. All right. Well, we'll kick off the show this morning, catching up with a group that we touch base with, we at least try to touch base with annually. And I'm talking about the Connecticut River Conservancy. And Angela Chaffee's on the line representing that organization, as she has in the past. Registration is open now for the Connecticut River Conservancy's Source to Sea cleanup. This event, now in its 23rd year, has grown into one of the largest river cleanups in the country, and CRC is inviting volunteers to continue the tradition of getting dirty for a cleaner river. And that's coming up on Friday and Saturday, September 27th and 28th. We'll be talking a lot more about that, how you can get involved, how you can help the effort, even if you can't be involved in the cleanup. We also want to remind regular listeners that while we touted the Housatonic River cleanup a little over a month ago, this is a much more intense and broadly geographic effort. So even if you're down here in Fairfield County or up in Litchfield County or listening way out in eastern Connecticut, it is a fantastic way to get involved in, as we said, one of the biggest river cleanups in the nation, but also to a water body that we're going to find out is so extremely important, not just to the New England states through which it runs, but also the Sound and ocean system into which it pours. So, Angela, thanks for joining us again, and welcome to the show. First, beyond the brief introduction of the cleanup, let's dig into just a little bit of backstory on the Conservancy. You guys have been working hard to make sure the Connecticut River has remained a real pristine environmental corridor going back to 1952. Give us a little bit of the more recent history on the organization and the work that you've been doing besides this cleanup.
Sure, John. Thanks for having me. So the Connecticut River Conservancy, as you mentioned, we were founded in 1952, back when our rivers were treated as dumps. And so our organization has been working for decades on helping to clean up our rivers and, as you mentioned, make them be this pristine resource for community members. We think of it as we want clean rivers that are also healthy, and not just healthy but full of life. And that includes wildlife. We like to say anything with feet, fins, or flippers, insects, fish that live in the river, and the people that are accessing the river as well. So we tend to say that Connecticut River Conservancy, we're the voice for our rivers, and we find environmental problems out there, and we work to fix them. And it's not just in Connecticut, as you mentioned. We work throughout the whole Connecticut River Basin, which starts up near the Canadian border. The river forms the border between Vermont and New Hampshire and goes through Massachusetts and down into Connecticut. So we touch four different states with our work.
And can you riff a little bit on what I introduced a few moments ago in terms of how important the pesticides or lawn fertilizer or petroleum product that may go into a storm drain or basin way up in Vermont or New Hampshire could either on its own or in tandem with other dumping still create a ecological impact, not just into Long Island Sound, but beyond. I mean, the Connecticut River does play a role, however small, in a global kind of ecosystem, doesn't it?
That's right. Yes, absolutely. The Connecticut River, just for some perspective, provides 70% of the fresh water that is entering Long Island Sound. That's a significant portion of the fresh water going into that water body and then out into the oceans. So we want to make sure, our goal is to try to make sure that that water is as clean as possible. And so we're working to help people understand that discharges to the river, whether it's in Connecticut or all the way up in Vermont, New Hampshire, they accumulate together. They work together to create issues, and so we want to make sure that we are preventing that and trying to keep our rivers clean. There have been dead zones in Long Island Sound, for example, because of too many nutrients in the river, and the Long Island Sound doesn't care whether those nutrients came from Connecticut or Vermont, New Hampshire. They are still causing the problem. So we're working to clean that up. In Connecticut specifically, we do a lot of water testing. We have a program coming up next week where we're going to be testing water all up and down the Connecticut River to measure nutrients, to see how many nutrients are coming from Vermont, New Hampshire area, how much is specifically coming from Massachusetts, and then into Connecticut. So we're trying to put some bookends on where are these pollutants coming from, and that helps us figure out a plan, a solution.
That's pretty good.
We collect water samples with the Connecticut River Museum throughout the summer down near the mouth of the river. We have people that go out at sunrise to collect water samples and measure oxygen levels in the river, and that helps us give a picture of the health of the river as well.
That's pretty interesting in respect to the fact that, for years, on this program, and obviously, Connecticut has sort of been the little state with the big mouth complaining from an air quality standpoint about pollutants that are going into the air, as far west as western Pennsylvania and Ohio, that through the jet stream and atmospheric conditions are kind of ending up giving us, breathing warnings in Connecticut, and I know we've been fighting against that for a long time, so it's great to hear that your organization is taking point on the effort to find out how much of what may be coming down the Connecticut River is impacting the Connecticut's leg of the Connecticut River in terms of kind of the toxic saturation.
That's right. It's one large system, and so we try very hard. We have state boundaries and political boundaries within the river basin, but the river itself is its own ecosystem, and so everything is connected within that. And to the larger scale that you were mentioning earlier, the Connecticut River is a piece of the Long Island system and part of the Atlantic Ocean system and the whole global system. And so really, it may seem small when you think about it from a global perspective, but there is no away. We don't have a place where we can put our trash away, where these pollutants can go away. There, it's all part of one big system. And so we want to try to make sure that we're preventing that those pollutants in the first place.
Yeah. It's also interesting to note, as you mentioned at the beginning of the show, you know, they used to make a joke about a number of Connecticut rivers where back in the 50s and early 60s, you didn't need a canoe to get across it. You could just walk across the sludge that had congealed into what was the river. And at the time, that kind of dumping, I guess probably since pre-World War II up through into the 60s, that was a kind of a component of economic development, but much in credit to the Connecticut River Conservancy, economic development and economic benefits to the states that through which the Connecticut River flows has improved greatly thanks to the cleanliness of the river. There's a lot of folks that are visiting from all around the world to fish or boat or bird watch and do other things on the Connecticut River because it's so clean.
Absolutely. Our rivers have really become a gem. All up and down the watershed, we have cities and towns that used to turn their back to the river and dump their waste into the river are now turning back to the river to make it be part of their community, and that's really great to see. It's important to know, though, that even though the rivers look clean, a lot of the pollutants that we're dealing with these days aren't as visible, the nutrients that we were talking about, bacteria sometimes. So we need to be, you know, that's where we're talking about clean, but also healthy and having full of life so that it's a very healthy ecosystem that is supporting lots of types of life. And that does include the economic aspect as well, because as you mentioned, these rivers are an important piece of our communities. They are they support economics, but they also support the health and well-being of our community members who live and visit there, and that's really important.
Well, we've got five or six more minutes with Angela Chaffee. She's with the Connecticut River Conservancy. As we tape this program a few days before the broadcast, we're celebrating and welcoming a brand new river steward here in Connecticut. Tell us about that individual, Angela.
Absolutely. So her name is Kelsey Wentling, and she's our newest river steward covering the Connecticut portion of the Connecticut River Basin. We have four river stewards, and each of them cover a different portion of the watershed. And Kelsey is lucky enough to be down in the Connecticut area, beautiful area. Our river stewards, their jobs are different depending on where they are and what sort of issues are facing the river in those regions. And so Kelsey will be doing a lot of work to, as we mentioned, doing some water sampling, organizing volunteers. We have, throughout the summer, we do water chestnut pulls and invasive species removals and things like that. So she'll be jumping in and getting involved with that. We do a lot of advocacy for the river legislatively. And so with legislative sessions starting in January, we'll be looking at what bills are coming along, particularly around water quality, water quantity, water standards, and trash issues as well. So trying to make sure that laws are being passed that will prevent trash from entering our rivers. So she starts this week, and if you see her out there, give her a hello.
Or toot of the horn on that boat as she goes by.
Right.
So as we were saying, and you had just mentioned, in regards to cleanup and keeping the river as clean as possible, just last year, more than 2,800 volunteers hauled almost 50 tons of trash from riverbanks and waterways just across the four states that abut the Connecticut River. So, you know, while we'd love to see 2,800 folks or more volunteering this year, it really speaks probably to the volume of trash that still accrues in the river and why, 3,200 volunteers will put a big dent in it, but still may not be able to get the whole job done, right?
Absolutely. So we average about 50 tons of trash pulled out every year. And so we'd love to have as many people come out and help us. It's really inspiring to see all these people come together over one weekend and work locally, but have an impact across all of New England. It's really great to see. So people can head to our website, ctriver.org/cleanup. There's a button there that says join a group. If they look there, there's a map of all of our registered groups, and so you can find a group near you who is accepting additional volunteers and go join them out on the cleanup days on the 27th or the 28th. But there's a lot of work beyond the cleanup, they as well. We have realized over the years, this is our 23rd year doing the cleanup, and we've realized that if cleaning up our rivers once a year was a solution for our trash problems, we'd have solved the problem by now. It's not a solution. And so we're looking at other ways to stop trash from coming into our rivers in the first place. And so we're looking at legislators, what sort of laws can we be passing that would keep this trash out of our rivers, and so that that could be things like the bottle bill or banning plastics or styrofoams, getting these products out of our systems, and so that way they're not even ending up in consumers' hands and having the chance to enter the waste stream in the first place.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned
the legislative laws are one way of doing that.
Yeah, so I'm glad you mentioned that, because in Connecticut, I think we're approaching the halfway mark in terms of our many cities and towns creating localized plastic bag bans and other similar plastic ban initiatives. And now, as you know, the state of Connecticut has gotten on board with an initiative that has kind of begun its first phase already. I'd be interested in hearing if you even know. Angela, I mean, in terms of the proportion, how are things like plastic bags in and of themselves impacting waterways like the Connecticut River?
I don't have specific numbers about plastic bags. That's a very hard thing for us to track. Mm. While we're collecting trash, we do ask people to keep track of what trash they're finding during the cleanup. But that's a tough one, because a lot of times those bags will get buried in a sediment along the riverbank,
yeah,
and they break down into smaller pieces. So it can be hard to track. But I can say that plastics and tires are the top two things that we find every single year during the cleanup. And so that includes all sorts of plastics, from plastic bottles and beverage containers to the bags, the other plastic packaging, all sorts of things. The styrofoam is even a type of plastic.
Right, right.
And we've been finding dock floats. So styrofoam and plastic foam is used a lot of times to keep docks afloat, and we're finding that in our rivers as well. It's a direct source of plastic pollution into our rivers. And so we have a part of our campaign this year is encouraging people to take a look at what's under your dock when you're pulling it out for the season, and swap your dock if you've got plastic under there. There are better alternatives to keep that trash out of our rivers.
Excellent. In the last couple minutes that we have with you, Angela, just hit us with a couple of the major points that people might want to know about the cleanup. Do they need to, if they are finding a group through ctriver.org/cleanup, do they need to be coming with all the tools and the hip boots, or do you need a personal watercraft? Do you need pontoon boats? Do you need anybody in any kind of watercraft that has the wherewithal and the will to get out there on the 27th and 28th?
So each cleanup group is unique, depending on where they're going and what sort of conditions they'll be facing. And so what we encourage folks to do is to head to our website and click that Join a Group button. And on the map there are pins, and if you click on the pin, it'll open up information specific to that cleanup group. It'll tell you who the group leader is and how to contact them. It'll tell you if that cleanup is going to be on land, in which case you might just need boots and long pants and gloves, or it'll tell you if it's on water, in which case you may want to bring a watercraft if you have one, or be prepared to be on water. There's also a button, once you open up those pins and open up the page with information for the specific group, there's a button at the bottom that says Join This Team. And we encourage you to click that. It will put you in direct communication with the group leader. You can talk to them and see exactly what you need to be prepared for the day.
Fantastic.
And we also encourage you, while you're at our website, there's a button as well that says Take Action. And that's going to take you to a page that has all of the information about our trash campaign. You can learn about what sort of laws we've been following. We're putting some pressure and challenging some corporations like Dunkin' Donuts and Cumberland Farms to do better, get rid of some of their plastic and foam waste, and promote reusables and other things like that. So take a look over there and see what you can do to help us out to keep this trash out of our rivers in the first place.
Fantastic. Well, it's, once again, a shout out to Kelsey, our new Connecticut River steward for the Conservancy. We hope folks will get involved in the trash campaign and come out to the river cleanup. Since 1952, the Connecticut River Conservancy has been bringing people together to prevent pollution, improve habitat, and promote enjoyment of the river and its streams and tributaries. Healthy rivers support healthy economies. This year's Source to Sound cleanup is happening Friday and Saturday, September 27th and 28th. Once again, just go to ctriver.org/cleanup to get signed up, whether you're going out on the water, along the banks, or just taking part in some other way to help, or getting involved politically. They would love to have you. Angela Chaffee is the Connecticut River Conservancy's representative on our program this morning. Angela, great to talk to you, and best of luck with this year's Source to Sound cleanup. Well, folks have heard us chatting with folks from New Horizons on previous segments of the award-winning For the People, and we are beyond excited to have the opportunity to help New Horizons unveil a first-of-its-kind initiative in Connecticut. The non-emergency medical transportation sector, and those of you who don't use it or never had to use it or had a loved one use it, it probably bears still listening to this segment, because you may in the future, but those who have used it know that there have been historical challenges. Most trips in Connecticut are handled by a for-profit company that focuses solely on transportation, but now this unique new model has emerged and proven to be effective. Skilled nursing homes and housing facilities are opting to transport their Medicaid residents to doctor's appointments rather than relying on transportation companies to do it, and New Horizons is the first nonprofit organization in Connecticut to undertake this initiative. Based in Farmington, New Horizons has over 200 residents between New Horizons Village in Unionville and Cherrybrook Healthcare in Canton. This is something that if you have a loved one who's in a care facility or is recuperating or aging in place at home and needs these kind of transportation systems, thank heavens for New Horizons for launching this new generation in transportation. Carol, heartiest congratulations to you and your entire staff for making this happen.
Thank you so much, John. We're really excited to talk about Sunshine Wheels and introduce the services that we have to the public.
So let's take this all the way back to the beginning. Obviously, your residents, their loved ones, your administrators, social workers, schedulers, nurses. I know from experience that when the ride doesn't show up or shows up too early or too late, or there's issues somewhere along the ride, the ripple effects are incredible.
Right. Can you imagine being in a wheelchair, in many cases unable to see or have any manual dexterity or issues and challenges speaking? Can you imagine waiting for a ride that never shows up? You don't know how you're going to ask for help. You may not have a phone. Offices are closing. It's getting dark outside. And you're wondering if you're going to be able to get home that evening. Those are the kinds of experiences that our residents dealt with over the last year. There was unreliable transportation, inaccessible transportation, inconsistent drivers and vendors. And
right.
A lot of those drivers had no experience with their wheelchairs and
yeah.
Inappropriate vans that weren't necessarily safe.
Right, and the sadder part is, when you have good and responsible drivers, that have the knowledge but the wrong vehicle, or you have the right vehicle and drivers that may not have the skill or talent to be able to interact with or serve the patients. So, you know, it's like you could, it's like a Rubik's Cube, and like you really have to get all the colors lined up on all the right sides in order to make it what is a routine thing.
Absolutely, and those are the problems we were hearing about, and so New Horizons decided that we wanted to be part of the solution. And as a nonprofit that really supports independent living for all, we felt that without access to medical treatment, one could never live independently. So we felt it aligned very well with our mission, and it was time for us to get in and become part of the solution.
So as a nonprofit and branding this with your own Sunshine Wheels handle, this is not only providing optimal service for your own residents, but has created a situation where it's going to be in demand beyond the New Horizons world.
We are so excited. I mean, we have people calling us. We're moving forward and expanding thoughtfully and taking our time to do that, because there's a lot of infrastructure that needs to be put into place, new vans, new drivers, etc. But we're talking to a lot of organizations outside of New Horizons that are very interested in partnering with us. They know that we have a lot of history with transporting people in wheelchairs and with other physical disabilities, and so they're very anxious to help us come and serve their needs.
And as far as your residents are concerned, in a lot of ways, you know, they already ride these vans. They already are. There's a familiarity factor that you hope will become widespread among what will be, I'm sure, a rapidly growing. I mean, I don't know how you're going to put the brakes on this, if you'll excuse the pun. It's like I don't know how they're not like kind of lined up like they're waiting for Rolling Stones tickets at your door, waiting to join.
They
Sunshine
actually
Wheels.
Are lined up. So it's more just us getting all the infrastructure in place to move forward, but. Yes, we treat this as a relationship. I mean, our tenants, both at New Horizons Village and at Cherrybrook, really appreciate the fact that the drivers, first of all, are well-trained. Secondly, know them on a first-name basis. There's a comfort level there. There's a familiarity. They trust the vans and the safety of the vans, and I think that's really important when you are dependent on rides like that to get to very important appointments.
Yeah, and you didn't just strike out on your own trying to reinvent the wheel. You actually approached the state's non-emergency medical transportation vendor, VEO, to partner with, right?
We did. As we were facing a lot of these problems, we were working with VEO to come up with some solutions. We met with them several times. They came on site here, met with us, met with our residents to actually firsthand hear what all the problems were, and really worked for several months to try to resolve a lot of the problems, and even brought in the state a person who oversees that contract. Mm-hmm. But although things were improving, they just didn't appear to be approving at the rate that we felt was acceptable, and certainly probably we were wondering if, in fact, the services that were necessary were not going to be there in the future. So that's when we stepped in, and as luck would have it, it was the same time that the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving was offering their Social Enterprise Accelerator Initiative program, and we said, you know what, this is a calling. We know this is the time. We need to step in. We need to really become active in solving this problem. We got involved in the program, and here we are now. We started our pilot program in April. We're transporting all of the Cherrybrook residents, and we started our second phase in July, where we're transporting village residents who choose us as a service, and every day we get more and more people signing up, and we have, gosh, at least four or five other facilities that are trying to work with us. Yeah. To come up with a partnership in the future.
Yeah, and VIA will always provide backup if you have a van that goes down, you know, with a mechanical problem, or if the demand of the audience, so to speak, is greater on a particular day, just for whatever reason, that just happens to be a day a lot of people have medical appointments or what have you. You've got a safety net.
Right. Well, Vail has other providers.
Right.
As you mentioned, they're for-profit providers. And yes, if there is an event where we cannot provide a ride, there are other vendors that Vail can refer the client to.
Excellent. Well, it's great to talk to you, and we're going to kind of hear the other side of this, why this program resonated so much with the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving. So we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to check in with Melanie Tavares over at the foundation to hear about their important role in this. But in the meantime, we thank you, Carol Fitzgerald and New Horizons, for being brave and breaking out and trying to form this new brand, the Sunshine Wheels program, and we look forward to talking with you more about it in the future. So we will be back in touch to hear how Sunshine Wheels is expanding throughout the greater Hartford area and hopefully here into Western and Southern Connecticut soon. So we'll chat with you again in a few months. Thanks for being part of the first half of our program. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. This is Connoisseur Media's Director of Public Affairs, John Vauquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this message. Every day, millions of Americans live with mental illness or addiction, but fear of stigma and feelings of isolation keep many people from seeking the help they need. With the right help and support, people can recover to lead happier, healthier lives. Treatment is available and recovery is possible, but overcoming stigma is a critical first step. You're not alone. Visit stampoutstigma.com/recovery to learn more. September is Recovery Month, and you're going to want to learn how to stamp out stigma. Once again, visit stampoutstigma.com/recovery to learn more. This has been a public service message from Stamp Out Stigma, Optum, and Connoisseur Media. Well, thanks for sticking with us as we talked about in the first segment of the program. This unique new model has emerged and been proven to be effective to the point where they're lining up to participate with Sunshine Wheels through New Horizons. But this program may never have gotten off the ground if it wasn't for the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving. Melanie Tavares is with us now, and she is working with the foundation. And Melanie, let's just start by telling folks about the Social Enterprise Accelerator program that Carol Fitzgerald mentioned as being, the means of discovery for Sunshine Wheels.
Sure. No, I'd love to tell you about the program. The program is actually a 3-year program. It started about a year ago in October of 2018, and it really was in response to the foundation's thinking with nonprofits in the area about new ways that they could generate unrestricted income and revenue. It's a challenge for most nonprofits to find other sources and diversify their funding away from the traditional grants and foundation dollars, and we wanted to be a partner in helping them think through what their strengths were and what would actually make sense. And so we engaged a partner called No Margin, No Mission. They're a national organization, and both Mike Oxman and Larry Clark, who are the principal partners in the organization, have done extensive work around the country with nonprofits in helping them to think through who they are, what they have available, and how they can use that to generate revenue in support of their mission.
So, forgive my ignorance, but was this a situation where the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving heard about Sunshine Wheels or had a familiarity with New Horizons and decided it would be a great fit for support through the Social Enterprise Accelerator Program? Or did New Horizons apply to the foundation for support and it keyed in to the best possible funding source, which was the accelerator?
Yeah, so actually it's closer to the latter. So the program was actually designed so that we could gauge interest in the greater Hartford area among nonprofits that might be interested in learning more about how to generate revenue in a different and unique way, something that would be of value to them and that would work with their mission, their unique mission. And so we actually had 49 organizations apply, and they went through a series of pretty intense workshops over the course of the last year, and about 38 agencies completed all of the workshop series, and then 10 actually applied to take it further and develop a business plan. And New Horizons was part of that 10. We call them the Tenacious 10. They were the group that really took it all the way to the end and developed a plan and an idea for how they could make this work.
But the foundation has the wonderful reservoir of resources that you were able to bring to bear to help all the Tenacious 10 create business plans or develop marketing strategies, and most important, creating the fundraising initiatives to make their projects happen.
Yeah, and absolutely. I think this was a great way for us to leverage our resources, you know, in tandem with some expertise that, you know, we don't hold. I mean, no margin, no mission. You know, they're really the ones who have been doing this work nationally. And so for us, it was an opportunity for us to leverage our resources in bringing that expertise here to Hartford.
Excellent. So where does the accelerator go from here? Is there another round of solicitation and applications pending, or is this a program for 2020?
Well, actually, we're interested in following the Tenacious 10 through the next 2 years and learning from what this process gleaned for them as organizations and as a cohort so that we can figure out how we can continue on with this model of support. It really was an exciting opportunity for us here at the Foundation to learn a little bit more about generating earned revenue and how we can be a support in helping the organizations to leverage all that they bring to bear. As you probably have heard from New Horizons, you know, this was an opportunity not only for them to look back over what they do, where there are gaps in service that they could fill because they have expertise, but also to engage their board members and new donors. And so for us, it was also a learning venture.
Excellent. Well, in conjunction with the foundation, New Horizons has tackled the challenges posed by their experiences in the non-emergency medical transportation world. They have launched this first-of-its-kind initiative in Connecticut called Sunshine Wheels for their own organization, and they're quickly developing partnerships with organizations throughout the region and are going to be expanding through other areas of Connecticut with this new model that has proven to be very, very effective to transport their Medicaid residents to doctor's appointments rather than relying on transportation companies to provide the service. If you'd like to learn more about what New Horizons Village is doing on their end, you can go to nhvillage.org, and if you'd like to see all the great work that the foundation is doing, you can go to HFPG for the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving, hfpg.org, I should say. Our guests this morning were Carol Fitzgerald, CEO of New Horizons, and Melanie Tavares, who's with the foundation. Melanie, great to chat with you this morning. Great work, and we can't wait to talk to you again. Thanks for being part of the program.
Thank you, John.
We talk about a lot about financial literacy on this program, and that's because it's so darn important. And whether you're buying a home, planning for college, or preparing for retirement, everybody, including me, can use a little help managing money. And Chelsea Groton Banks, Chelsea University, is a community education program completely free and not having any bearing on whether you're a Chelsea Groton Bank customer. So kudos to the company for helping to empower individuals, families, and businesses to take control of their finances a little bit better. Lori Duffesy is with us. She's Executive Vice President of Chelsea Groton Bank, and we're going to be talking about this free, convenient opportunity to learn more and get more financial literacy under your belt and into the bank. And the best part of it is you can do it in your pajamas or on your smartphone because it is all virtual and all online and accessible anywhere in the world that you hear our voice. So welcome, Lori. Say good morning to the world.
Thank you, John. Good morning, everybody, and thanks for this opportunity to talk about Chelsea University.
Yeah, but give us the backstory on the bank, because certainly I've driven by branches in our listening area, all down into New Haven County. You got banks all over the place.
Well, I love talking about the bank. We are a 165-year young community mutual bank, and I'll explain the difference between a mutual bank and a stock bank, but we are based out of New London County, and we also have lending throughout all of Connecticut and southern Rhode Island, so technology has absolutely helped us level the playing field and reach out to help more individuals and businesses in the Connecticut market. We have 14 branch locations. We have loan production office in Hartford County, and we are a full-service bank for consumers and businesses. We offer mortgage and business lending, financial planning, consumer banking services, and our financial education classes. And, you know, our whole mission is to help individuals and businesses and communities reach their particular goals, and we do that by taking them on as if they were our own. So we are less transactional and very emotionally engaged with deep relationships with our customers and our community.
Yeah, and this is how you and many of the other local banks that have been with us so long sustain and compete well, you know, against the big global brands. So kudos for that. Also to the Chelsea Groton Foundation for all the money that's given back, the scholarships that are created, and to each one of Chelsea Groton's employees who each really take pride in the individual volunteerism that they give in their community. So tell us about this Chelsea University.
Sure. So 15 years ago, when the bank turned 150 years old, one of their gifts to the community, John, was to hire and implement a community education program. So we hired one individual to teach financial literacy classes primarily in the school systems, and we partnered with the FDIC and leveraged their Money Smart program. Since that time, we have invested hundreds of thousands of dollars in community education, not just in the school system, but we found through our partnerships with the community that there was a greater need for adults to take classes, because managing finances is so complex that people, that they're doing okay planning for life, you know, normal life events, you know, buying a home, planning for retirement.
Standard, yeah,
well, what
three.
About those unplanned events, right?
Right.
So we have what we call as our Chelsea ambassadors. We have another 10 team members that work for Chelsea Groton Bank, and they go out in the community and they supplement and teach more classes at senior centers and community centers and at nonprofit organizations. So we used to call it community education, and what we decided to do, because we have our internal training that we call Chelsea University for our employees, our team members, we rebranded our internal community education program, Chelsea University, and we took it to the public. And we started offering more classes in person and online, and I want to talk about the online program. And then we also said, you know what, let's offer lifestyle events, and let's get people together who have similar interests. So we have book clubs, and we have seminars, and we have fun events like yoga classes and wine tasting. But it's really about getting people together to start to have some frank conversations about managing finances and planning and investing time in planning and making good choices. So
yeah, just call me when one of those yoga and wine classes, you know.
You do the yoga first, and then you have the wine
together.
After.
Right, right. Then you really relax.
So the feedback from the community, John, has been phenomenal, but a lot of people are saying, oh, the topics are great. I wish I could get there. So how do we reach a broader audience? And so we decided to take our community education program. We still have it in the classroom, but we also have it online, and that's through a platform called Enrich. So if you go onto the website, chelseagroton.com, and you go to community education, Chelsea University, you can log into this platform. It is complimentary for anybody to use. And why would we do that? If the community and the individuals within our community are not successful, we cannot be successful as a community member. Hmm. And so this education and extending that to anybody that is willing to spend the time to use it, it's such a powerful tool. We bought tens of thousands of subscriptions, and we want people to use it and leverage it as a resource.
And
so,
it's not just tutorials either. I see there's games and calculators. What kind of games can help people become more financially literate?
Well, we all know that gamification is fun, and managing finances is not always fun. So if you can teach through games, and that's when you have matching games and when you might read something and then take a short quiz and then you get rewards and points for that, that's the type of gamification engagement that can be found through the platform. And the platform is used in our area schools. A lot of teacher community use it in the classroom, and they'll assign curriculum to their students, which has been really powerful, because then they'll take maybe a 15-minute class at night, because the students can sign in, and then they talk about it the next day. And it's just created wonderful engagement out there, and I think our teachers have been our biggest proponents of getting the word out that this tool is so helpful. The other audience that we use this tool through programming is through our local employers. So if you are a business owner and you want to be able to extend benefits to your employees, and a healthy employee, whether it's physically healthy or financially healthy, they're going to be more productive, and they're going to show up for work, right? And they're going to be happy.
Yeah, and one certainly impacts the other. I mean, if you got financial troubles, the emotional drag on the productivity at work is going to be higher. And if you're financially literate and you're feeling good and you're tracking your progress, and you know you got money in the bank and the education to back up investing, then those worries melt away, and from the workplace and at home, the employee is much more happy and productive. So it's all good.
Exactly. So our employers are taking advantage of it and passing on that benefit to their employees. Yeah. And certainly not all business owners have an HR department or a training department to be able to, you know, have formal classes.
Sure.
So they offer a link as a benefit to their employees, and they put together their own rewards programs, so they may incent their employees for taking these classes. And when you take a class, you can print a certificate and prove that, yes, I took that, 30-minute class on creating a budget. And the employer might, some of them are giving out gift cards, I'll buy you lunch or I'll buy you a cup of coffee, just small incentives to just show them that this is really important and we want to help you be financially well and financially prepared.
And
very powerful.
And for employers, you have these programs that include titles like 8 Mistakes to Avoid When Starting Your Own Business and Understanding Self-Employment Tax, Emergency Fund Calculator. But you're also launching Cultivating a Great Business series, which is beginning shortly, September 17th. What's that all about?
So this is our second round of having that particular series this year, and we are, especially in New London County, we have
I think about 55% of the businesses in our footprint that are true small business, mm-hmm. entrepreneurial spirit. So when you are a small business owner, you are jack of all trades. You are human resources. You are the accounting department.
Sure.
You are the compliance department.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very difficult for these small business owners to navigate things. So what we decided to do, because we have so many subject matter experts, accountants and attorneys and different centers of influence that we work with, plus our own team members, that we pulled people together and said, okay, what are some of the most important topics for our business owners, whether you're thinking about starting a business or you're new in your business or you're growing your business, what's really important for them? And so we created these topics in the small business series, and it was so successful. At the beginning of the year, we've decided to run it again. But it's an investment in everybody's time. You know, people have to come to class, and there's a little bit of homework. But what we have found through feedback from those that have attended, they're getting a lot of useful information, but they're also making connections.
Excellent. Well, there's a lot of payback that folks can get if they want to make the travel, especially for small businesses. And it sounds like a great program. And I know that they can learn about that and more, as well as connect. You said once again to go to Chelsea Groton. That's Chelsea Groton.com for that. But I also did want to, before we have to let you go in a minute or two, Lori, is you know, folks, it's important for folks to know that they can get the most out of Chelsea University by creating a personalized profile. And a lot of people are sensitive about putting information into a computer and giving it to an organization, even if they're getting something as valuable back as the free online education and resources that you give. Just walk them through a little bit about how creating that personal profile will really maximize the way that they can benefit from all you offer.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. And so being safe online, and there are courses within this platform that will teach you how to be safe online. We ask for very little information. We don't ask for, you know, dates of birth, social security numbers, or any non-public information. So an email address and your name in order to get into the system, and then you are going to answer some questions within the system, and it's basically about your life events, some of your goals, more goal-oriented, and topics that you're interested in learning about. And as you take classes, you start to build transcripts, and then the system is designed in such a way that it will recommend more topics for you, and mm-hmm. it will build on the knowledge that you are developing. So when you get into the program, you may be a beginner, right? But then you'll start to take more advanced classes as your skills grow.
Oh, I see. Good.
And these classes are not just for beginners, and because we are all faced with very complex financial decisions that we have to make for ourselves mm-hmm. and for, let's say, aging parents.
Yeah, sure.
And there are classes there that can help us navigate some of those, and it can really become a resource. Now, online is great, but what we also want to make sure that people understand is you can always pick up the phone and call us.
Right. And go
or
to
stop in
or go to
and
Facebook,
take our
right?
in-person classes, because sometimes an online class may not be able to specifically answer the questions regarding your specific situation.
Yeah. And there's people that like that person-to-person. They absorb better in an environment where they're in the room with the person versus watching it on a screen. But before, we really have got about 30 seconds, but it's
okay.
Critically important for people to know that they can get their feet wet. If they don't want to jump into all this right away, or they want to kind of ease in and kind of get a feel for what's going on, they can just go on Facebook, right? You have live live programs on Facebook?
We do. We have Facebook Live, and we, different topics that people are interested in, and they only have to spend, 10 minutes with us online. If they can't watch it live, they can go back, go to our Facebook account, days later and look at some of those topics, yes.
Right. Lori Duffesy with us, Executive Vice President of Chelsea Groton Bank. If you're buying a home, planning for college, preparing for retirement, or you just want to get a better handle and make the most out of the money that you're making, head for Chelsea University. This community education program is completely free and accessible for you along with all the other resources. They'll even send a Chelsea Groton Bank representative to your community group. Even maybe if you're not in New London County, you can find out all about it by going to chelseagroton.com. Lori, thank you so much for being part of the program this morning. Fantastic information. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program for the people. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.